we're back in open session.
Is there anything else you'd like to present before I start with my questions?
I just wanted to note that there was a request from Victoria about the date of charges, because we didn't have that. Just as a awareness of how she didn't know about her charges, when you're arrested, they basically put the last known address on your documentation. So when a prosecutor issues a long form, which is the complaint, the lawsuit, to start the criminal case, they send it to that address. She was no longer there, and it was not forwarded. The date of charges, I'm just gonna make sure I get this right, Victoria, is, I wanna say November 15th of 2022. When she received notice, she notified our office, and then we sent out the self-report. I'd also note, and I'm not the criminal defense attorney on this case, but the level of midazolam in the system is actually really low. If you look at either Winnick or Schultz, which are the two guides that we use, it's below therapeutic range. So I'm a little confused on this case, and I'm gonna leave that to our criminal defense attorney as to how it was, why it was charged as a DUI, except for the fact that the midazolam was present in the system. But they have her at 42 nanograms per milliliter. And when you bring that out to milligrams per milliliter, it's 000042 of midazolam, which is a subtherapeutic amount. Again, not the criminal defense attorney here and not presenting myself as the expert on it, but I don't know, when all is said and done, if this ends up shaking out as a DUI case in the first place. And then finally, you know, we're in a situation too where she has not been convicted. And my position would be, I think we can maintain the status quo since she's already under an interim, which has testing, counseling, and some other requirements. So my request to the board, and obviously after your questions, Member Solomon, is if we can maintain the status quo or talk about what the next step forward needs to be. But in my position, is it hasn't really changed anything because we had a concern. The concern is being addressed right now through the interim procedures to the board's request. And so my request would be not to do anything more permanent today and allow this to bump along until we can get a decision from the Mesa court. So that's all I have for you.
First, I'd like to start by asking Dr. Bella Pianta to please speak up loudly and clearly. I am hard of hearing, and I have my hearing aids on max volume, and I still have trouble hearing you. So we're not going to be adjudicating the DUI. What we're dealing with is the Veterinary Practice Act and the potential for the now documented use of controlled substances. We have received the second report, which documents a second occasion of the use of those controlled substances, and under which she was arrested at the hospital, Mirandized for not only failure to control, but also for DUI. Unfortunately, that information was not disclosed prior to the adoption of the prior CA. So based on the fact that we have new information, that there's an outstanding warrant.
Well, there's no longer.
There was a warrant, is that correct?
There was, and the reason that was is, again, because the summons for her appearance was sent to her old address.
Real quick question of clarification on that. Okay. How long before that did we move?
Do you know how long before November 11th did you, or November 15th did you move? Can you give a general sense?
Can you speak up, please, so
yes.
We can hear?
I don't remember. I'd have to like look on the computer.
In a couple of months?
Couple weeks,
three?
Ago. No, like maybe like 3 or 4 weeks.
Those weeks? Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you put a forward in with the post office?
Yes.
And I did change my address with the DMV also.
Did you get other mail forwarded to you, just not this one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
And just for a point of clarification, that the charges were the 15th, they would then set a court date called an arraignment or initial appearance. That's where she would have been expected to appear, and then a warrant was issued because of the failure to appear, which is fairly common. It happens fairly commonly, and I've quashed plenty in my day. I can't say that everything forwards. I don't have, all I know is she would really have no basis not to deal with this because it does trigger warrants and other reasons and other issues. And she had, you know, she was, you know, has counsel, so I don't think that this was a purposeful, her avoiding purposefully this charge. I mean, as soon as she found out of the warrant, she had a question.
Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the board, on September 12th, 2022, Mr. Carey emailed me that Dr. Bella Piante had a new home address in Phoenix.
September 4th, okay.
12th.
12th, I'm sorry, 12th, okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Now that we have this information, which was not disclosed in your prior appearance, which causes some concern because the incident happened 6 weeks before the appearance, the end of July appearance before the board. So, and again, although the charge hadn't been done, it was a second incident. And it also was not disclosed to the evaluator. Only the failure to control. There was nothing about substances. And again, we're not trying to adjudicate. This is not a criminal body. So we're dealing with the Veterinary Practice Act and
protecting the public.
And yes, and protection of the public based on unauthorized use of controlled substances.
Suspected.
Thank you.
And
thank
I think my concern regarding
we
this, my concern characterizing this as an arrest is when a hospital blood draw is done to collect blood, it's called a gray top tube. It's for the purpose of chemical testing for forensic purposes, which is in a criminal case. The arrest is not a hands-on cuffing and returning someone to
right.
So the arrest has to happen under Arizona law because we have what's called admin per se, which is by driving on our streets, you have to submit to a blood test. So I don't believe, based on what I read in the report, that she had knowledge of being arrested because there was no cuffing, there was nothing like that. It was a formality for the purpose of being able to then move to admin per se. So I don't know that at the time that this case was being considered previously, that it's fair to attribute to her knowledge of an arrest, because there was every hospital blood draw, it does not typically involve cuffing, arresting someone, or anything like that.
This was stated by the officer as is documented in the police report.
And he wrote the word arrest, and he has to, because the only—
And Mirandized.
Mirandized, anytime someone is in custody, in any kind of custody, being asked questions.
I'm going to say we have documentation.
I agree, and I think the concern is that she did not have neither the documentation nor were the typical arrests that we see of the placing of handcuffs, the placing in the back of a vehicle, moving someone from a therapeutic setting like a hospital to a police station. None of that occurred, and so I don't think it's— I understand that what's documented, and I think you can certainly make decisions based on some of the documentation, but I think from her perspective, I don't think that would qualify as an arrest. I mean, had she been formally arrested, and had they formed at that point the decision that they were going to charge her, they wouldn't have gone to the long form, which is where the prosecutor submitted the complaint. They would have just written a citation, said, you're now charged with DUI, and they didn't do that.
I'm also concerned about what was found in the purse on the police report.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no reason, no legitimate reason to have those objects in a purse.
Right.
In a personal purse. I mean, again, I don't know if I can read what's in there based on the
police
report.
Used bottle of ketamine.
But I don't know if I can read what's in there is what I'm saying. But I mean, that's concerning. I don't know if I need to say that based since I have concerns, or just once.
You can just reference it.
Yeah. So that's very concerning. I mean, is there an explanation as to why we'd have that, or is that something you're wanting to talk about, or what?
I think at this time, because it's still part of the criminal case, my advice to her would be not to make statements about it. But with the idea, too, that we do have, again, the ability through through consent agreements to address this in the interim as this shakes out with the court system.
And I just want to make a very clear point here is, I mean, civil rights,
huge.
So yeah, you definitely don't want to say anything, plead the fifth, that's fine. But as a regulatory body, we're held to a different standard than a criminal court and civil court there. So without that information, it's very hard for us to make a decision. Do you quite understand what I'm saying with that?
I do, and the Supreme Court under Spivak recognized as well that in these situations, a licensee is not required to choose between their constitutional rights to silence.
Very true, very true.
And so, and for me, I think this would be different if where we were is nothing was in place at this point, no agreement, nothing. And you had concerns and you wanted to put some guardrails on. I don't think I could be arguing that as effectively, but we actually do have an agreement in place right now that involves monitoring, counseling, additional evaluations being requested, some restrictions on what you can utilize by way of prescriptions, single prescriber, pharmacy. I mean, the guardrails are there right now. And so I think that where I would like to get her is through the criminal part so she can come back here and just freely give you as much information so that when you reach a final adjudication, you're comfortable that you have all the facts.
And I think that information is really what's going to be important. I agree, you need to protect a criminal standard and all that. That being said, those guardrails, I agree with you, they're already in place, but those guardrails were based off of information that we didn't have at that time. So would you agree that this is a little bit different and changes things?
I wouldn't agree it changes things because temporally all these allegations were happening in the same fixed area about 6 to 7 months ago. She now has the protections in place and she's had a work cessation of 6 months. So I don't think it changes, I don't think it's more cumulative in some way that now we need additional protections. And I also think that we were working, unfortunately, off the same limited information until come late December or early January when I got this police report and we got the notice that she had been charged with something.
So would you be saying that having the first incident and then not knowing about this, placing the information on the first one, now having this information, does that not establish some kind of pattern that we didn't actually see before, so it was hard to make guardrails before, correct?
I think that the board it went on the side of believing there's a pattern without even having a pattern. And I think that if she had come to this board with a singular self-report of just a DUI, nothing else, or she had come to the board with a singular report of some level of concerned impairment, I think you would have ended up in the same place. I don't think that there's something cumulative now just because we have multiple things that the board is considering. I mean, I have plenty of DUIs. I think if you probed, if someone had other issues that were not criminal, but impairment at home, things like that, I don't think you would certainly say now we have multiple instances and we need to go harder or more aggressively to treat this person. I think it's still the same menu of options that you have put on her, and they are extensive.
So even though it was one instance before, basically, now that we have a second one, you're still looking at it as a singular offense.
I'm looking at it as the fact is it's a singular issue that I think that can be addressed and is then effectively being addressed on an interim basis. I think that between Keen and between the other evaluations that you've suggested, you're going to have a comprehensive picture, and then at that point, I anticipate that you would potentially transition to a more complete or final order that would have some similar conditions. That would be my guess, unless, of course, something comes back that's a clean bill of health here, and then we have to talk about it differently.
Well, the new information elevates the concern about protecting the public, which is the first part of our mission statement for this board. And I hear what you're saying about waiting until after the adjudication process is completed. I do not feel, based on the new additional information that was not previously disclosed, that the existing guardrails are not sufficient. And I would like to make a motion that we offer a consent agreement to be signed within 7 days or return to the board for further action. That Dr. Bella Pianta will cease practicing until the adjudication is final. In addition, it would request that the evaluator, Mr. or Dr. King, be provided with information, which he also was not provided with, specifically the police reports, the drug tests, et cetera, the documentation, so that he can respond to you and to us about his evaluation, and give him an opportunity to re-examine it. It's also, he also brought to our attention that Dr. Bella Pianta did not attend the evaluation session by herself. And we will be asking the evaluator to address that. Is that standard practice? Why was that done, et cetera? This is based on the previous failure to disclose the information that was available with the last time you appeared before the board. I want to reiterate the request for the evaluation of the neurologist and psychiatrist, and that is to be done within 60 days.
And
that was stated in our previous board order, but I understand you were not clear, even though I said it three times, so.
We were gonna ask for some points of clarification, but I think that's certainly clear.
Okay. Until the license would be, Dr. Bella Pianta would not be practicing veterinary medicine until the case was adjudicated, at which time it would come back before the board. Is there anything I've left out? Anyone else on the board?
As a point of clarity, how does the board propose that she fund the neuropsych, which is going to cost about $2,000, and the psych eval, which is going to cost about $1,600, and the Keen re-eval, which typically re-evals about half the price of the normal if she's not allowed to work, given that she has been back in practice with the guardrails, there's been no issues. I think if the goal is to put her in a position where she may not be able to comply, I think that consent agreement accomplishes that. If the goal is to be able to get information that is valuable to the board, then I don't know how she raises the resources to be able to fund all of these evals.
Historically, and please correct me, Victoria or Tracy, those costs fall upon the respondent.
I understand that, okay, as a term of the consent agreement. I think the concern I have is how does that get accomplished with someone who has already been on a 6-month cessation from practice and now is being asked to take on essentially 2.5 more evaluations. And on top of that, I think, again, and you know, I don't mean to be, you know, flip or difficult, but I disagree that there was a failure to disclose here. She does not have, based on how this played out, she's sitting in a hospital bed, a cop comes up and talks to her without giving her a physical arrest. They draw two grade 2 tubes, or they even ask the nurse to do it as part of the normal pulling a rainbow of tubes. I don't think this is a failure to disclose. And in fact, if she really wanted to be covert about this, she wouldn't have self-reported. But as soon as she had notice of it, she self-reported. And so I really...
Well, that's a legal thing. Well, that's actually in statute.
Well, I understand, yeah. It's a legal thing, but at the same time, I don't see this as a true somehow failure to report when a civilian is put under a blood draw at a hospital. I think it is qualitatively different than if one of us was driving down the road, we get pulled over and get taken over to Scottsdale jail to have our blood drawn. I think it's completely different. I don't think this is a failure to disclose, and I think if that's the premise upon which we're basing an order, that's problematic.
Be careful.
I can say in the past there were multiple car accidents set. Now, was it detailed about exactly what happened in those accidents? No. And I remember asking a question about the accidents. So kind of, I don't know that we need to beat this dead horse. Yes, it would have been nice to know then. We didn't know. Did she know something was going on? Sure, she knew something was going on. Did she know there was going to result in charges? No, she didn't know that yet. But the accident was in what we had in front of us, that there was more than one accident.
But there's a lot of additional information in there that we didn't get.
We didn't have the specifics.
That's fine, we did not have the specifics of each accident. But in, it was disclosed, kinda.
Kinda.
Right? I mean, so it's not.
Not thoroughly.
Not, yeah, that's right, not thoroughly.
Okay.
And that's the thing, is we're just not getting the information we have to make safe choices or the.
To protect the public.
Yeah, I mean, that's our biggest thing is, and again, I want to say I completely agree that we need to make sure we're looking out for civil criminal issues. And that's going to be paramount. But as a regulatory body, we also are here in charge with protecting the public. And when we don't have the full information, we don't have the full picture, even under some kind of executive or a session or something where we actually have information, we have to see what's in front of us. And what's in front of us is really concerning. And it's concerning for what I'm seeing just in general. I mean, again, going back to what we found in the purse, that's a little bit concerning as to reusing our position for these things. I mean, so it's very concerning as to this information I'm getting that, oh, well, this happened. Okay, well, we didn't really become forthcoming with all the information, even though we were aware of it at the time based on the police report. I mean, we were asking for the purse while we were still having issues after the accident. So, I mean, we knew. We have to kind of see what's going on in front of us and make these decisions based on this, and based on this, and based on the inability to get information that's contradictory, again, because of a pending case, we're put between a rock and a hard place here, but we have to see what's in front of us, and what's in front of us is concerning enough, in my opinion.
Yes. I'd also like to add that DEA be notified and provided with the documents that we've received, both from Honor Health and from the Mesa Police Department.
And are you taking the position that her medical records can't be disclosed to a third party, even though typically board materials are protected under the confidentiality rules?
No, nothing medical record of your report under the DEA, but we do have to make referrals for certain drug considerations.
Right.
So for things that are in there based off of certain controlled medications, that's the information that would be, but it would not be, as far as I'm aware, anything medical-wise. It would just be, hey, we need to look at these DEA logs and these drug logs to account for where these medications have gone, where they've went to. So that would be where the DEA gets involved, and that's under their purview of their statutes and rules, where we have to keep records of drugs, when the invoice was gotten, when was it unopened, when was it opened, what medications were dispensed to which patients, when, how were they dispensed. So that's all going to be under DEA current regulations. So that's the information that would be disclosed. Nothing about any kind of drug testing or any kind of medical stuff or anything that was obtained from there. It's all in relation to drug logs that are under statute and rule, under their purview and our purview in that regard too.
For controlled substances.
Controlled substances.
Thank you
only.
For clarifying that, Okay. Do I need to go back and reiterate the motion or formalize it, or is everybody clear? This would be to offer a CA signed within 7 days that would stipulate that Dr. Bella Pianta would not practice veterinary medicine until her case has been adjudicated and the information provided back to the board for further action if necessary, and that that within 60 days the neuro and psych evaluations will be completed. The names of those to provide it have to be submitted to you for approval. Is that correct, Victoria?
That's how it's reads in the current.
Okay.
How long in the current one did we give them to do that?
We did 60 days.
60 days.
So that should have already happened.
And it didn't.
But it did not.
Right.
No, it should not have already happened.
December 28th was the date of the CA
signed. So we're 60 days. We're still within the emergency.
We're still within. Okay. So within. Okay.
I'm trying to get a handle on how long out are we waiting for all these things to come in? Like, when do we feel like this is going to be heard before the court? Do we already have appointments to get this done since it was already asked of you in December? I'm trying to get an idea, because that makes a big difference in what I'm going to approve or not.
Okay, just to add some information to you, Dr. James, the July board order, which ordered the hair test, That was in July. And the evaluation by the addictionologist, that was not done until November. So I'm trying to compact the timeline to get things done in a timely manner. The hair test is good for 90 days. So clearly, by the time it was done, it wasn't going to show what was done in these previous two instances we have documentation on. But I think that we need to, our option is to, and I'd like to hear from fellow board members, whether we state a new 60-day period or go under the existing one, the time remaining under the existing CA.
Well, if we're going to do a new consent agreement to replace the current one, it'd probably reset the 60-day clock.
Yeah, and one thing I would just provide for the board to consider based upon counsel's comments. Mm-hmm. Because she can't practice until the criminal matter is decided, is it really necessary that she complete these evaluations within 60 days, or is it just necessary that she complete the evaluations before the stay is lifted?
Yeah.
Because who knows how long the criminal matter, it could take, weeks, it could take years, who knows? And that may be, provide some relief, at least in the short term.
Can we break this up so that things that would be done more quickly could get back to us quicker? Like, for example, going back to the Dr. Keene's report.
Yes.
Giving Dr. Keene the additional information and getting an updated copy of that is probably not that hard to do. But waiting on the court hearing to finish could be years. And I am a little hesitant to put something to approve something right now that's going to be years before we ever see this again.
No, that's very good. I mean, we could modify it later based on information that kind of comes to us, correct?
Well, you can always.
But they're not tied together.
What happens in that court has nothing to do with
what we're doing here.
It doesn't at all, but we can't get the information until it goes through the court. That's the question. And that's totally fine. But again, we only have the information in front of us.
You don't have enough?
I know. I was like, I
have enough of what's in front of us then, for my concerns right now.
Yeah,
What is the information we're going to get after the court hearing? I think we all know what has happened. What has happened? Even
well,
if
we
she's
all have assumptions
about
on.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
But, and what I'm trying to understand is, so say the court case goes through.
We don't need to tie them together.
And then what? And then she's going to say, okay, because that piece is done. Now I'm going to,
I don't think we need necessarily.
Yes, I have this in my system. Well, I feel like there's more information because we have a report from an addictionologist saying there's not an issue. And so until we get information saying there is an issue, who am I to judge if there's an issue or not? We have a lot of stuff in front of us that's extremely concerning.
Yes.
But I'm not the one that judges that.
Yeah, you are.
Right.
That's as a regulatory agency, you are.
As to whether we think that.
Yeah, we are. We're regulatory.
But I think there's a lot of unexplained questions here that might change the outcome.
But again, we're a regulatory agency, not a criminal or civil agency.
Right. And are you you're not the criminal attorney for.
I'm not.
Do you know when the case.
So with Mesa, what typically happens, based on my experience, is they'll set a pretrial conference pretty quickly. So I think we'll have a PTC probably this month. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So her PTC is probably going to be this month or early February. At that time, a plea offer would likely extend because it's Mesa. A lot of the time, they will base it. They'll just offer her a straight up plea to a DUI. But what I saw in the records, at least at this stage, is she has a subtherapeutic amount. If we look at the chart, subtherapeutic amount of benzo in her system. So not even a point that could be impairing, based upon just looking at the chart. So I don't know what Mesa looking at that would necessarily do, just because most of the time when you're dealing with cases, you're seeing a therapeutic or overly therapeutic amount in someone's system.
Again, as far as amount, the Veterinary Practice Act doesn't deal with quantifying the amount.
Right.
It deals with the
trying to understand
the
timeline and as far as if there. And again, I realize that's getting too far ahead. If there was an accepting of a plea deal or not even they dropped it, but either way, I mean this.
I think you're looking.
I don't know, if you have a best case scenario.
Yeah, there should be a PTC, and I can tell you that.
Thank you.
Just looking that up. But typically, it's 2 to 3 PTCs if you have to actually adjudicate the case. So I think you're looking at probably 3 to 6 months of the case in that situation. With that said, it could certainly go much quicker if there was to be a resolution.
Okay. And based on the fact that the neurology evaluation
and psych
evaluation were requested and signed in November, have those appointments been set?
We're in the process of setting that. We do have 2 people identified, one for neuro and one for psych. The psych is someone that the nursing board uses, so I think it should be approved. The neurologist, I just need to get back with the doctor on that. She's just started back to practice, so the financials are part of the issue, and she is attempting to strike the balance between having the funds to pay these folks and then also being able to schedule it within the time period. So we're in process. She has provided pharmacy information. She has identified a counselor that she'll be submitting for approval. So she is, and she has met with other individuals regarding the neurology. She's already had one meeting to see if we can use that person as a neuro. So we are on our way.
While I understand and I hear you talking about the financial constraints, our mission as a board is protection of the public. So that's where our emphasis has to be.
Well, and I think that, I mean, we can do the evaluations later. I mean, again, if we're not practicing, we're just not practicing. Evaluation sooner can be helpful for maybe changing things, but I mean, if they need to be pushed off, they need to
be pushed off. I would be more comfortable with not practicing until we get the report back from Dr. Keene, and when we have these evaluations done, which theoretically should be done in the next month.
Right.
All of those things.
Yes. But I mean,
so my thing is, let's look at what we get there before we say, oh, we're not even going to look at this until the court hearing's over.
No, and I think there's a better way of wording that. But I mean, I wouldn't say that in 30 days automatically something's going to change. It's like, well, we just need the information to determine that. So how would we word that? I don't know if that's a. But I agree. If it's going to be years, we don't want to wait for that. But until we get the information, not much is going to change, I don't think.
Well,
so
I think it would help me to understand what professionals are saying about.
Yeah, I agree.
What the addictionologist is saying, what's the neurologist saying, what's the psych saying.
Yes.
That might tell us our answer, and then we're done. We're not waiting on a court hearing. If I feel like I need that information in order to move forward with this, and if you link it to the court hearing, you could be a year out.
Well, I need lots of information to move forward in general, not just the reports.
I'm just saying, take it in a stepwise fashion,
yeah.
So we get something in the next month or 2 months.
I stayed in 60 days. The thing that was waiting until the court adjudication was her voluntarily not practicing veterinary medicine during that time. If we get the reports back and we want to amend that, based on the findings in any way, can we not do that, Mark?
No, you absolutely.
Yeah, so that's.
I'm just trying to still understand, we have this consent agreement in place that has a lot of restrictions. And so I'm trying to understand if we had, what would change if she had been more forthcoming? Would we have additional things in the consent agreement? Because I mean, ultimately our goal is typically to get people healthy, compliant, on the right track, as we've seen with a number of these people. So I'm trying to understand what additional piece we would be adding or doing differently. We're doing the drug tests, we're doing the counselors.
We had a similar case, Madam Chair, that involved a car accident, taking out utility poles while under the influence of opioids.
Right.
And that went through a much more extensive process. She was evaluated for possible inpatient treatment, it went through a much more extensive process during which she wasn't practicing, as I recall. Is that correct?
I don't remember.
Okay. But
how long? She wasn't practicing for how?
6 months.
For 6 months, so.
I just, I have a lot of concerns about, again, we're not getting any information, and stuff's trickling in, and it's like, okay, and when we ask questions to try and qualify this, we're not getting answers, which again is fine, but if I don't get answers, I can't be like, oh, well, it's fine then. I mean, that's my concern is I understand the methods going on here, but we don't get answers at the questions we asked at the last session. Then we get this information, and it's like, okay, what are we not getting in general? We're not getting information in general. We're having to pry it out, it almost seems. And that's just very concerning to me. It's like, yeah, we need to protect ourselves and we need to protect the case, but you also have to become forthcoming with the board that is here to protect the general public from this kind of stuff. And if we're just saying, well, we don't get information so we can't protect anybody, then again, what is the point of regular?
Yeah, but how are we prying if the respondent actually provided us with that information?
We didn't get it until after the fact. We knew there was an accident that we hit two electrical poles, and we had head trauma, and we had all this kind of stuff and stuff that's found in the purse.
But we got additional information as they received it.
Yeah, but as they're receiving it, we knew this was going to be a problem. This should have been known this was going to be a problem, just based on what we have in this report. So, I mean, this was not like, oh, we didn't know about it. It was, oh, there was an accident. Let's just gloss over that. And that's my concern is we're not forthcoming with the full information. We're a little bit, and that is the big concern I have, is what else is going on here? And we don't know because we can't get the questions answered.
And not only with us, but again with the evaluator.
Yeah.
So the evaluator needs to be provided with this additional information.
And the information I have in front of me says bad things were happening here, and I can't get anything contrary to that.
So with...
Victoria, or sorry, go ahead.
Few things. Chair Krieger, February 21st is her pre-trial conference. I don't have more information than that. The docket's not very helpful. My concern here is that we have someone who, in an accident, may have sustained head trauma. I mean, she was taken to a hospital. You have the records related to that. She has a subclinical amount of midazolam in her system. I am concerned if you had someone come for you with a neurological issue, if that's what you were dealing with, I don't know that we'd be talking about these broad strokes of putting someone to pasture for a while. And so I have a concern. All I'm saying is, I'm telling you, it looks like a low amount of midazolam based on the NMS report. You have an accident where she is concussed. The evidence is there. You have guardrails in place. I think we just have to think about, I understand it's going to take some time to develop information for you, but you have a lot of information. And I think the idea of getting a complemental or a supplemental addiction eval makes sense. The other stuff, it's in the agreement. She has to comply anyway. So I understand that it's not the easy way of us being able to come like in a standard of care case and just tell you everything that happened with the treatment of the animal. But we are being as forthcoming as the law A requires and that we can be. That's the issue.
Well, I guess, let me ask a question around the midazolam, is when was that introduced into the body before this blood was taken? And how was it introduced into the body? And was it taken by pill or injection, or were you willing to share that information? Was this a prescription drug, or where did the midazolam come from? Even though it's subtherapeutic, it was in the body somehow. So did that come from a prescription? Did it come from a stock of the DEA drugs? When was it actually taken, and why was it taken? Those are the things that I need to know to figure out, yeah, it may be subtherapeutic, it's still there.
I understand.
And it's a controlled drug. Yeah. So how was it introduced? I mean, is that information we're willing to get today?
If she were to disclose that, I mean, what I can do mm-hmm. is I can take a recess and see if that's something we can disclose. The issue we have is if it were disclosed, it certainly could be seen as, could be used in her criminal case. So
Can we go into executive session for that, Mark?
Well, hold on. Let him say.
I would need to recess with my client, A, to see if she wants to make a disclosure to that. Mm-hmm. And executive session would certainly guard against the public as a whole. I can't tell you that would be guarded.
I think it'd still be subpoenaed in court.
Sure, can be subpoenaed.
So, and again, I understand what you're saying there, but do you understand where I'm coming from as to, we have a doctor who can order these drugs, who has a license to prescribe them and has a license to use these in animals. Where did that midazolam come from? Do you understand what I'm saying there?
I understand.
Am I concerned?
Okay. I understand what your concern is, okay. And I think what I'm balancing is what we are asserting is a constitutional,
right, I agree completely. Under
Spivak and under the Arizona Constitution.
Yes.
What the state is asserting, what the agency is asserting is a statutory concern. And the issue is under the analysis, so when we have a constitutional right and the state has a statutory right, we get strict construction, which means that everything you do has to be very tight. You can't, you know, if this was something where you were dealing with standard of care,
yeah.
we'd all be on statutory grounds. We have the constitutional grounds,
yes.
and which means we do have legally higher ground, mm-hmm. which means that any order you put on her has to be narrowly construed.
Yeah.
So when the answer in response to us saying we're asserting a constitutional right is we're going to yank her license for a period of time, that does create some potential concerns that you're going into a territory of violating your constitutional rights still.
No, and I agree. Then that's not a violation of constitutional rights. It's, again, this is where the DEA evaluations would be coming in, looking
right.
at drug logs, these kinds of
right.
things, because that is in statutory, and that has nothing to do with constitutional rights. Would you agree with that?
I don't know that I would necessarily agree that she, I mean, she'll
yeah.
cooperate where
yeah,
she
oh, yeah,
needs
yeah.
to cooperate. I think the concern I have is we're talking about putting her license on hold because, or in conjunction with the fact that she's asserted a constitutional right, and that causes...
No, it's not, no, that's not where it is. It's just, I don't have the information to regulate properly if I don't have that information.
Well, I think you have sufficient information to develop a consent agreement that
yes.
allows her both to practice and get you the information you need, and, or put some limitations on what's being requested so she can
okay.
go pay for these evals. And
yeah.
provide the information.
And I agree. We need to protect constitutional rights for
Victoria,
sure.
Victoria, did you have something that you wanted to add?
As far as controls that are already in place with the second amended ICA is monthly drug testing. So
mm-hmm.
that would provide some level of comfort because that monthly test should be coming up soon, correct?
Yeah, within the month.
Within January,
right?
And January is almost over. So may I ask if you've identified place to do that?
EverHealth does provide that.
Okay.
We're just, because she's not coming through the court system, it's just to get her on the system.
Okay. So that's what I would have expected him to say. So I just, you know, again, want to share, then that's going to be another benchmark for you all that you would have by the end of January.
So Flynn, do you two want to pause this?
Sure,
and
if you wanted to give us a brief recess.
We need to move on to a couple of other items
real
quick that I want to do, and then we can decide whether you want to come back. So yeah, go ahead
sure.
and head out and take your time. We've got a little, I appreciate all the discussion, and we got
of
a
course.
Little bit backed up, and
I
I'm
know.
Hoping we can still reach Dr. Roy by phone.